This is an RNZ podcast.
Piki mai kaki mai. It's great to have your company today for Country Life. I'm Carol Stiles.
And I'm Duncan Smith. Kia ora. Today we're hearing about attempts to scare off birds in vineyards.
We're visiting a farmer who started growing veggies on a large scale and has been astounded at how many varieties of cabbages there are.
Then, in our feature story, we're crossing the Southern Alps with some teens wanting to turn their lives around.
But first, our guest this week is from County Tyrone in Northern Ireland. Enda Bradley is a shearer and he's one of the foreign agricultural workers who've been allowed into New Zealand during the pandemic. These workers are helping to plug gaps in the labour market during the shearing and harvest seasons.
When I left home, everything was in lockdown. You could just do your grocery shopping and like this essential work was the only work that was allowed. There's no social life. And then as soon as I left, actually, I think it was on the 26th of December, they brought in another lockdown, which even restricted things even further.
Do you normally do come to New Zealand for the season? This is your fourth season here. Were you concerned that you might not be able to make it this time?
Yep, I was very concerned. I love coming to New Zealand and enjoy the work in the country. But just with the whole COVID pandemic, I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to travel overseas or if even New Zealand would allow any workers in. Fortunately, it worked out okay.
And what was it like shearing back home under the restrictions?
Well, it was classed as essential work, so we never get stopped really or anything by the police. But yeah, it's usually a pretty sociable job back in Ireland. As farmers, they have you in for tea and maybe a few beers. But this year, it wasn't like that. It was just pretty much we would turn up and shear. There's only two of us shearing, and someone would just fill the tiller for us, and someone would just lift the wool away and bag it. It wasn't as socially interactive as it was in previous years. It's awesome coming out here. It's completely different. Travel to work in a van, you don't have to worry about anyone having coronavirus. And yeah, it's pretty good. It's social. Everyone's happy to see you. So it's really good. It's great to get out again.
I understand that fewer shearers came than that were allowed to come in. They were allowing 60 shearers in, but only about 27 came under these special visas. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think the quarantining for 2 weeks would have possibly put a lot of people off. 2 weeks is quite a long time, I suppose, sitting in a room by yourself. But I think that could have been a factor too. Maybe the cost of flight, I think that could have been like a contributing factor too. It's a peak season. The thought of maybe you're missing out on that 2 weeks of work while you're quarantining. But maybe some fellas thought it just wouldn't be financially viable for them to come with the price of flights and quarantine and things like that.
How's that affected you though?
Oh, no, it's been perfect. It's been a very good season for me, actually. Probably the best season I've ever had, actually. It was worth my while coming, very much so.
And what's the supply of shearers like where you are? You're in Southland at the moment.
Well, the contact that I work for usually has, yeah, he's got a good crew. But on previous years, there's a lot of international shearers coming. There's usually, it could be up to 7 to 10 of us come from overseas to shear. But this year, there's only 3 of us came. And then the wool handlers too, there's usually anywhere from 10 to 12 wool handlers come from overseas, but there's no wool handlers are allowed in. Yeah, it's been very different.
So you're pretty busy then?
Yeah, it's been a very busy season, so it has. It's been good, very good.
Enda Bradley speaking to Sally Round.
And now to our look at conditions on the land. Where in Northland the weather's been beautiful, but not nearly damp enough if you're a farmer. Weaner cattle fairs are underway, and because there's a bit more grass around, the market's picked up. Quite a few dairy herds are being sold, smaller herds with between 150 and 250 cows. The agent we spoke to says people are saying they've had a gutsful of dealing with all the regulations. Land prices are good, so they're getting out. Some are retiring, but others are looking at going into horticulture, back into beef farming or subdividing. The problem is there are so many herds for sale, they might not get what they were hoping for their cows. Last year they would have fetched $1,500 to $1,600 and were easy to sell. This year prices are around $1,400 to $1,500 and they're hard to move. Around Pukekohe it's been dry and warm all week, so irrigation is keeping crops growing. Outdoor vegetable growers are stirring up the dust, cultivating bare ground.
A farmer based at Pairoa in Waikato says his pasture is green and growing, but things aren't as rosy a few kilometres down the road on the Hauraki Plains. He's pregnancy scanned his cows and has an empty rate of 9%. As for milk production, he's down 8% for the month and 1% season to date, which isn't much of a worry at all because he's spending so much less on feed than at the same time last year, so is still ahead financially. Bay of Plenty's been threatening rain. The first kiwi fruit will come off in a couple of weeks as part of Zespri's early start program, and there's still concern about a labour shortage. Our contact says pay rates have gone up 16% in the past 12 months in order to attract more workers. He says the new norm would be the living wage as a starting point, but a lot of people will be paid a lot more than that. He says some of his team were getting $30 an hour last season, but then some days they were rained off and didn't get paid. There'll be almost 200 million trays of kiwi fruit to pick this year.
King Country needs more rain. It's tricky to get space at the works, so if some's offered, farmers are grabbing it, even if they'd prefer to wait a week. There wasn't a lot of shearing happening on farms around Taumarunui at the end of the week. The Taumarunui Shears event was on in town. Taranaki dairy farmers have been cancelling space at the works for their cull cows. The milk price is good and they have plenty of supplementary feed, so they're keeping them in the milking herd. That could lead to a bit of a rush at the end of the season. Early pregnancy scans have shown an average 15% empty rate across the region, a bit higher than farmers would like.
Gisborne's been pretty warm. Good rain 8 days ago has seen animals in pasture respond. Cattle and sheep are still recovering from last year's drought. The weather's been great for vegetable growers getting crops in and off. Sweet corn's been delicious this year. Tomatoes are coming off flat stick. Squash boats have been coming in steadily to be loaded and then sail for Japan. In fact, the other day in Gisborne's little port, both a logging ship and a squash boat were docked. It's not big enough for two logging ships, and sometimes there are four sitting out in the harbour waiting for a spot. A comprehensive development plan has been drawn up for the port, and a story in the local paper this week says it could bring thousands of jobs to the region. The farmer we called in Hawke's Bay has been flat out weaning calves and scanning their mums. Out of 800 cows, he's found 17 sets of twins, so they'll be given special treatment.
Manawatū is warmed up, with temperatures in the mid-20s. We're told it's a game of two halves. Southern Manawatū had between 30 and 80 millimetres of rain a week or more ago, and looks a picture. But northern Manawatū had three, or even nothing. So feed is disappearing, and there's not much tuckera around. Silage stacks have been opened. Generally, though, farmers are feeling chipper. It's been an easier summer than last. Across Cook Strait and in the Tasman region, hop picking has started. Despite the hail wiping some crops out on Boxing Day, what's able to be picked is looking good quality. Golden Bay had good rain Wednesday and Thursday. Up until then, it was getting quite dry. This moisture will set up farms well for autumn. And hopefully next week's predicted rain arrives too. Milk production is generally a little behind last year because of a difficult November, but it may catch up from now on as farmers will be able to milk a few more cows for longer. Our contact was very pleased that from June, Fonterra will pay up to 10 cents of each milk payment according to the farm's sustainability credentials and milk quality. He says it's important to recognise the changes needed, reward farmers who are changing, and it highlights how important sustainability is for all New Zealand.
Some parts of Marlborough received some moisture, but it's still fairly dry. South Marlborough's really dry. A number of sheep farmers who have rams out are feeding ewes to keep them in good condition so they get in lamb. Most of them will have got rid of surplus lambs now and are waiting for the March weaner fairs to offload surplus beef calves. There was a heavy rain warning for the west coast during the week, but only 8 or so millimetres fell. There's no water lying around in the backcountry, so young stock being grazed there need water carted to them. Grey Valley dairy farmers are feeding out and cows are hanging in well on once-a-day milking. Our farmer says his pregnancy results for the herd are nothing flash, but better than expected given what spring was like when the cows were being mated.
Canterbury had a good week of warm, dry weather, so a large chunk of the harvest was completed. However, for dryland stock farmers, particularly near the coast, pastures are rapidly drying out and feed levels are dropping. Otago could do with rain, it's relatively dry. The farmer we caught up with on the Taieri Plains is on to making his third cut of baleage and still has more to do. Things are looking well set up for autumn. He's already worrying about how he'll feed out this winter under the government's freshwater rule changes. Southland is having a stunner. There's been little wind, so grass is growing, lambs are fattening and cows are milking okay. Sheep farmers would like a few more cents per kilo for the lambs that are now flowing into the works, but generally farmers are pretty happy.
This is Country Life on RNZ National 101 FM.
It's the time of year when grape growers are desperately trying to stop birds from tucking into or annoyingly giving grapes a single peck. Most growers net their grapes, but there are other ways of keeping starlings, blackbirds, silver-eyed sparrows and miners out of vineyards. Sonic bird scarers that shoot a cartridge up into the air and then explode are used to keep birds away, as are gas guns that make loud booms, flapping kites and even lasers. James and Annie Milton have a biodynamic vineyard near Gisborne, and James says they use nature to help control the birds.
We have to net every vine, but we also, to cope with the birds, birds either eat seeds or they eat fruit. And so in order to balance the birds, we put feed out for the hawks, both the falcon and the hawks, and they like the patrol for the birds. And then over there in the middle of the vineyard, we've got grevilleas in this vineyard planted, which attract tuis and bellbirds, and they're very territorial. And we have orange, a row of oranges in another vineyard, and we have manuka and kōwhai in another vineyard. And this is all to attract, therefore, then the nectar-eating birds who want to defend their patch. We still have quite a lot of little pesky birds that want to come and peck holes in our grapes. But one day we're going to grow grapes without netting.
And the other birds see off the smaller birds?
Yeah, they're territorial, yeah. I mean, you just have to see when the hawk flies over waiting for his morning feed of pigeons that we have in our freezer, the little chirp chirp birds, the area goes quiet because they can stay away. But we do use things that make noises. In this place here, we don't kill any birds. The pigeons that we get to feed the hawks comes from that farm over there where he grows maize, and he gets really cross because the pigeons come and eat the maize seed. So a person comes along who loves shooting birds, he's a duck shooter, shoots the birds. We give him some wine and some cartridges, and he gives us the pigeons. We put it in the freezer, bring it out when the hawks need feeding, and there it is. We don't kill the pigeons ourselves. It's called, the basis of this is called Hakuna Matata, the circle of life. But we want as many birds as possible. Bird song in the dawn is the best thing you can have in a vineyard. It's only when they eat my bloody grapes I get cross.
James Milton from Milton Vineyards. His harvest starts on Tuesday.
In our next story, we're heading 10 kilometres west of Bulls in the Manawatū Rangitike region to a long-established sheep, beef and cropping farm that's had a slight change of direction. It's diversified into market gardening.
How's it going?
Jacob?
Yes.
Hello, Jacob. G'day. Good to meet you.
You too.
Finally. Yes. Jacob's just started with us last week when I was away, Carol, and he's doing the in-field harvesting management for the veggie crow and all the planting. So, but Jacob, poor guy's really, really in the deep end.
Yeah, I've been thrown in the deep end.
He's got some two or three good team members here that'll be helping him out.
Yes,
and
learning on the run.
We can just wander down if we want to see them doing a bit of cutting. You're going to finish it all today, are you?
Yep.
Yeah, okay, fantastic.
Hugh Dalrymple and his brother Roger run Waitatapia Station on land that stretches over 2,000 hectares. On the 1,500-hectare home farm, 800 are devoted to crops. This afternoon, cabbages are being cut.
They'll be just picking these for processing for the Spears Foods in Martin. If we have a look and see, you'll find they're select picking.
So tell me about Spears.
Well, they are a manufacturing processing company in Martin that produce a whole lot of the deli salads for both Countdown and Foodstuffs, which is Pack and Save and New World and Foursquare, I think. Yep, that's it. Quite a substantial contract they have. And so this produce goes into all those. When you have your daily salad and you go and get your coleslaw or your broccoli salads or something with cauliflower in it, or we do a little bit of flat leaf parsley for them and things, and we're going to expand the herb line a little bit. That'll sort of be sourced from Waitarapia.
And they're locals.
And they're locals.
Yeah.
Up the top of the road, 20 minutes away.
Have they been there long?
They have. Been there a long time. Couldn't tell you how many years, but a lot longer than I've been growing veggies, I know that.
Fresh veggies have been grown here for just 3 years.
This is Carol. It's Dahl from...
Hi, Nairi. You've got a big knife. How are you going?
Good. How are you?
Good. So you've been cutting cabbages all day?
No, we just finished harvesting broccoli.
They're quite beautiful underneath, aren't they?
Oh, they are, aren't they?
Yeah, once you get through all the yucky stuff. And the bugs. You see a lot of those out here.
There's a lot of waste at times, Carol. There's a lot of waste, isn't it, Nairi?
Yeah.
Lot of waste.
It's a bit like basketball. I can see you just firing them up into the bins.
Oh, it's pretty tough, cabbage. They do another pull-off of leaves in the factory as well. And the waste all comes back here. All the waste gets returned to Waitarapia.
And you compost it?
Yeah. Gets all piled up and composted and then spread out with a big muck spreader.
2,500 tonnes of cabbages are sent to Spears each year, and veggie deliveries are made to the company 7 days a week.
Probably 85% of the cabbages we grow go to Spears, and only about 15% go to market. So, yeah, it's a different size cabbage and a slightly higher standard in terms of presentation.
Now it's raining. Should we hop in the car?
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah. If we look to our left, you've got corn.
Now, the sweet corn's all for processing. It's going to McCain's Foods, and that gets shipped to Hastings, to their plant over there.
Are you quite away from Hastings here?
Well, in a little island like New Zealand, and we're on the west coast and they're on the east coast, it seems a long way, doesn't it? What is it, 2.5 hours and maybe push it? We'll call it 3. That is, in perspective, a stone's throw in most other countries in the world. 3 hours travel in a truck is nothing.
Hugh also grows peas for McCain. The farm's been growing maize, oats, barley and wheat for decades, as well as fodder and sugar beet, but has recently expanded its stable. There's now quinoa, 25 hectares this year compared to 2 last year. And then there's buckwheat.
The Japanese are very keen on it, and it's basically an organic product because you can't apply anything after you've planted it. So that's it. You plant it, there's no weed control, nothing allowed. And they turn into flour. It's, celiac?
Gluten-free.
Gluten-free, thank you, that's the word. Yeah, so they put it into that product.
Waitarapia has also grown squash for 25 years.
So we've been in the veggie game for quite a while. It's just the opportunity came up to supply fresh and see if, one, we're any good at growing them, do they grow well, what types grow well here. Probably one of the biggest things happened over the last time you were here, Carol, is a lot of irrigation's gone in. So that's the probably number one reason it's allowed us to look at hopefully what we'll call higher return crops. So vegetables on a fixed contract, and I'm going to give a bit of a range, but we should be making really no less than 6 grand of margin per hectare and probably more like up to 10 grand of margin per hectare. I guess we're probably a sheep and beef farm might be doing $1,500, $1,800.
This is Carol from
Hello.
Radio NZ.
Hello.
So I thought I'd just bring her and show her all the goodies that you guys have been harvesting.
Ooh, it's cold in here.
Yeah, we try to keep it at about 1 degree, 1.5 at max if we can. So just above frozen. So that's where they just sit, and they'll be crisp. They should be. Get them off the field, into here, bang, get the heat out of them.
What's in here at the moment?
We've got a mixture of broccoli. I don't think there's any collie in here at the moment. Broccoli, red cabbage, Savoy cabbage, green cabbage, and possibly collie, but I'm not sure where the collie is. So,
yeah.
How difficult has it been transitioning to growing fresh veggies?
Not easy.
there wasn't a whole lot of money made. In fact, there was probably a little bit of money lost, to be honest, to start with. You've got to be a good grower first and foremost, don't you? But then you're dealing with people coming to work, harvesting on time, making sure it gets to the chiller and doesn't sit in the sun, all the tiny little things. There's a raft of tiny little things that have got to be just right, and you've got yourself a reasonable result. Well, we're just not getting... We haven't got all the tiny things right just yet, but we're certainly getting better and better at it. I mean, the personnel thing's challenging, no question about it.
How's it been finding labour in this area?
Finding labour's the easy bit. Well, probably the question is, how is it good, easy is it finding good labour? That's hard. There's a lot of people want to turn up for payday and sundown, as one would say.
And for you, how's it been? You've had to learn a lot about new crops, I would imagine. Well, old crops that you didn't know anything about.
Yeah, there's nothing new about the crop, but the variety of seed choice, really just nothing. So you're totally relying on advisors. Totally. And you could have 10 or you could have 20 different varieties of cabbage. Easy. The same with broccoli. And some will grow better than others. And some will grow better in our environment, and some might grow better up north, and some better down. So you just don't know until you've trialled them. We had to borrow equipment to get started till we could buy our own. It's not just as easy as clicking your finger becoming a vegetable farmer.
From what I glean, New Zealanders actually aren't eating more vegetables.
That's pretty well correct. The sale of the whole vegetables in the supermarkets and in the little retailers and so on is about static. It's only, if anything, moving slightly, and that's probably because of a slight population increase. So it's not actually going up a whole lot. So the area where there is a big growth is in the bagged processed area. So you're ready-to-eat product. And believe it or not, the frozen market's growing significantly. Significantly. That's according to my information from McCain's. It's sort of looked like it's doubled. And COVID, and this is over the last 12 months, and it still stayed like it, they tell me, due to the fact people thought, oh, I can pull that amount of peas out, or I can pour that amount of mixed vegetables out, or that amount of corn out, and I don't waste anything. And they've got so good at snap freezing things and whatever they do, however they do it in those factories, so they're really quite a good product to eat.
What surprised you about growing veggies? Fresh veggies?
The intensity?
Be relentless.
It's relentless. It's absolutely relentless. When they're ready, they've got to go. You get a burst of heat and a bit of rain with it. Woomfa! Cabbage has got a bit more resilience from a harvest point of view. It's got probably more of a challenge from a disease and, I don't know, and what other insects and bits and pieces. Broccoli just suddenly goes, woomf, and it's all ready. You know? And collie's the same. Bang. Absolutely. You can plant it one, two, three, you know, planting this week, planting next week, planting the one after, or even twice in the week. They're all ready together. Bang.
Are you still farming stock?
Oh, yes.
Does your brother look after the stock?
Yes, brother looks after the stock. Stock's a massive operation, absolutely massive. And it's the biggest operation on the farm, not in terms of staff numbers, but in terms of turnover and volume of product and everything. So we're involved in PEIs here, pre-export isolations, so we offer services for that. We do a lot of beef finishing. We do Wagyus and a lot of lamb finishing.
What's the PEIs?
A pre-export isolation. So they're quarantined before the cattle leave the country. And we don't own the cattle, so they're for other customers. So we just offer a service on that. But it's still a big volume thing going on. So you can have 5,000 or 10,000 on the property at a time. Irrespective of people's views on live export, it's a very valuable market for the New Zealand farmer. A lot of stock farmers I know are happy to sell to that market because of the premium that pays.
What is typically heading overseas?
Oh, they've all got to be heifers, and they've all got to be breeding animals, but it used to be pretty much all dairy, and now there's a significant growth in the beef exports into China, and that's pretty much to do with the swine flu, where all the pork... all the pigs were killed.
So they're looking for alternatives.
And they'll probably raise their beef herds over there Some people say, oh, we're exporting all our quality stuff. Well, in fact, it's actually not. The New Zealand farmer keeps the best stuff, and it's what the New Zealand farmer doesn't want. We don't get to choose. It's nothing to do with us what goes. It's entirely, like I said, it's just a service we offer. And we get to offer that partly because of the feed we grow. We've got a lot of maize and the beet and a lot of straw and so on goes into that from the barley crops and so on, and also the size of the farm. You've got to have them all isolated in bits and pieces.
You're quite close to the coast.
Oh,
here.
We are, yes. As the crow flies from here, I could drive you out for a quick dip in the sea.
On the west coast.
Yeah, on the west coast. About 2.5, maybe 3 k's away. So, yeah, no, we're pretty close to the coast. So, it's seasoned by the sea, as coastal spring lamb would have it. There we go. You've got seasoned crops.
It's already salted.
Already salted, yeah. A little bit of whiff of fresh West Coast salt. Yeah.
Hugh Dalrymple from Waitatapea Station. He says before they planted the fresh veggies, they contoured the land, taking the topsoil off, levelling the bumps and lumps and creating a slight slope to control runoff. Then they replaced the topsoil.
What I find exciting about agriculture is it's a good career choice, you're always learning, you can always progress, there's always the next step. There's plenty of support out there, so you should try it as a job.
Country Life, 101 FM.
The 180 Degrees Trust runs youth development programs for at-risk young people in Canterbury. The biggest event on its calendar is the SAT, or Southern Alps Traverse, a gruelling, character-building adventure for teenagers that starts at a beach near Koomara Junction on the west coast and ends several days later at Brighton Beach in Christchurch. Jeremy Nurse is a founder and managing trustee of the Trust and has a lifetime of farming under his belt. He also oversees the Traverse. It's in its seventh year. Country Life's Cosmo Kentish-Barnes and RNZ visual journalist Nate McKinnon are near Arthur's Pass with Jeremy, where he's hoping to meet the descending party.
We're about a kilometre up the Minga River. Their whole trip from Goat Pass down to the Beely, which in Klondike Corner is around about 13 k's, so they'll be getting quite tired at the moment.
How did it go for everyone last night up at the hut?
I was in contact with the sat phone with Hayden, and they had a great night up there. The 16 in the group, no other trampers were there. Obviously no one came up from the Deception side because the river was in flood, so yep, all went well.
How do you think they will all feel when they come down to where we are?
They will feel on top of the world. Some of those kids, in fact, most of them will just not believe that they've done what they've done the last 2 days, even the last 3 days. They may not do anything again like it in their lives, and they'll always look back. They could be anywhere in the world, anywhere, and they'll always treasure this time that they've learnt to dig deep, be master of their own destiny and make it across the Alps.
Because most of these kids are from troubled or challenged backgrounds, aren't they?
Yes, there's quite a variation there. Some of them, their circumstances, you just would not believe that these kids survived the terror that they've had to survive in their families, and some of them are gang-related. But they always love coming out with 180, and we don't question them, we don't try and lecture them, we just show them the good side. They meet good people when they go out into the high country, farmers, shepherds, fishermen, people that are non-judgmental of their situation. Can you see us straight ahead of you on the other side of the river? You should be able to see a yellow parka.
We spotted you a while ago. We'll see you in probably something like 30-40 minutes.
Okay. Now, Jeremy, Nate and myself are on a scree ridge above the river, and Nate has got his camera set up so that he can film the group coming down the valley, and we can see them now.
Yes, they're just tracking down nicely at a steady pace.
And it's good that they are getting towards the end of this leg of the track, because the weather is starting to cave in a bit.
It is. What was a sunny day down where the Minga joins the Beely, it's now getting a little bit cold. They've got the westerly behind them, so that's good. They're not walking into headwind, but I see they've just stopped now for a bit of a catch-up and a drink of water probably. And I've got some Moro bars and a few crunchy bars in my bag here for them, so they'll be quite pleased to see me, I'd say.
At 14, Takoda is the youngest participant on this epic journey, and he's pleased to get to lower ground.
It was actually pretty rough. You know, like you'd have to sit down, jump off like some of the tree trunks and all that, and all the roots. It was pretty steep, but, you know, we got through it, yeah.
180 Trust adventure coach Bel van Noorden says some of the teens are struggling but are determined to keep going.
I think Mackenzie has kind of taken up tail end Charlie and just had a lot of doubts for herself for getting to the hut yesterday, and when she got to the hut she was just, you could see it on her face, she was so proud of herself. And I think Ethan's another superstar there, he's absolutely pushed himself. Grumbles at times, but just the fact that he'd never been on a big hike at all before, and he was just so keen, put his hand up for it, and yeah, he'd be one of my champions of the trip.
And Ethan is already being mentored by the 180 staff, isn't he?
Yes, yeah, he is.
How does that work? What do you do with young people who need a bit of guidance?
So our role as mentors is quite broad. Kind of the foundation is just to have someone who's on their side, and we've got the time to catch up with them weekly and figure out what their individual needs and goals are and help them work towards achieving that, and that varies depending on the young person.
They might come through youth court, we might get some referred through the Ministry of Education if they're having issues at school, we get some through Oranga Tamariki.
Chris Kelly is another adventure coach who works for the Trust.
There's quite a broad range of backgrounds that we get them from, but I guess, like Val said before, the common thing really is they just need a bit of support and someone on their side.
I went through the courts to get through to 180 and got told by my mentor about this trip.
A solid pair of hiking boots and a trekking pole help Ethan navigate the mountainous terrain. On his back is a heavy pack, but he's forgotten about that.
It's like, it's a part of me basically now.
Part of your body?
Yeah, because I've been used to it now.
What's been the hardest part of the adventure so far?
The hills. Those, what's climbing up the, what's it called, those mountain things. Yeah, the tree stumps in the way.
Now we are back near the Klondike Corner car park and campsite, and we're beside the last river the group have to cross today. The young participants are going through in groups of two with their arms locked together because the current's quite swift and it's actually deeper than I thought. I'm quite wet. This is the third Southern Alps Traverse for team leader Hayden Devine, who gives me a rundown of what's happened so far.
Day one, we biked on the West Coast Wilderness Trail, and we really lucked out with the weather on that day. We were expecting a lot of rain, and it all came through in the night. And then we were, obviously, meant to go up the Deception the other day, but river was up quite a bit, so we decided to come up the Minger instead. And we literally came over the pass, and it was just the weather completely changed. It was nice and beautiful and sunny, and the Beagley was quite low. And there was a lot of satisfaction, I think, of getting to the Goat Pass hut. It's one of those huts that you don't see it until you're right at it. So you're just climbing up and up and up, and then all of a sudden there's a drop down and you just see the hut. And there was a huge amount of relief of when they actually got to the hut. And they had a great night there. There's no lights, so we just had candles and played some games around the table, played some cards, pretty much ate food straight away, and they loved it.
Have you had any trouble with anyone?
There's been some tempers, definitely. You know, there's always a little bit of anxiety and There's a bit of frustration at the physical challenge of it, and certainly the section through the bush is just up and down and up and down and back into the riverbed, so it's quite rough terrain, and some kids were slipping over and falling, and it's not because they have poor balance, they're just not used to walking on really, really rough terrain.
What do you want these teenagers to get out of this?
Just a sense of self-belief and confidence, and we've definitely seen a lot of that. Knowing that things are hard, but you can still achieve them, because the most common thing we find is we talk to them about these kind of trips, and they're like, I can't do that, you know. And I hate hearing that. I hate hearing people say, I can't do it, when you know they can. So part of the trick is almost tricking them into coming away and then making them do it, something they never thought they could do, and then afterwards going, see, and you can do it.
Logan is 16 years old.
The whole reason I'm here, I could pretty much blame it on an assault charge that led to a family group conference, that led to mentoring, that led to here.
What are you hoping to get out of this whole adventure?
Time away from the city. It's a lot fresher. You don't have, like, all these bad thoughts in your head. You just kind of got happy thoughts.
Going without devices is challenging for the group, says coach and mentor Alex Monteith.
We do no phones, so they do feel that social disconnection, you know, compared to these days, it's very much on your phone and online. So it's a big thing to leave that for 6 days. And so it's really cool to see how they take on that challenge, and to see them grow and change from day one to the end is awesome, yeah.
And what's your background? How did you end up working for the 180 Trust?
Yeah, so I have a background in the outdoors when I first left high school myself, and then I went to university and did psychology. So I've always loved the brain, the mind, how people work, and always loved young people. So this job came up as an opportunity, and it felt like the perfect fit.
Alicia had some reservations about being away for so long, but now she's got no regrets.
Honestly, I didn't want to come, but now that I'm here, I wouldn't want to leave.
Why didn't you want to come?
I guess it was the whole idea of not having a phone and, like, not being able to talk to my friends. But then I didn't realise how, like, amazing, like, the friendships I would make while I'm here.
You've been 3 days without a phone. How are you coping?
Honestly, pretty good. Like, I feel like there's a big weight lifted off my shoulders. No one can contact me. Like, I miss my phone for, like, because I can't play games or, like, do anything on it. But, I mean, you know, get to spend more time, like, looking at the world.
And you were saying before that you had a few troubles at school?
Yeah. I got mixed in the wrong friend group and did some things I probably shouldn't have done and needed to get away from it.
We're on the south bank of the Waimakariri River, just adjacent to Toby Hill Farm at the back of Springfield. It's just such a delightful spot, and we're so lucky to have the goodwill of Heather and Trevor Teague to look after us. And so I think any moment now we're going to see the team come around the bend. They're going to be very, very sunburned. Well, let's hope they're not. They put their sunblock on, but there's that lovely view of the mountains back there.
And we can see them paddling away because the river's at about, 90 cubics, which is a good flow, but not that high. Hayden, how long have you been on the raft?
It was about several hours on the water, but it's gone by really fast because it's been so beautiful and warm and everyone's had such a good time.
They're carrying the raft now across a rather long stretch of pebbles to the farm, but they don't seem to mind.
No, because they know fish and chips is going to be there.
TJ.
Yeah.
After spending, 2 days walking over the mountains, what did it feel like just giving your legs a rest?
Pretty good, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, sitting down the whole way. We stopped off to have some lunch and, like if it's like shallow, then we could jump in the water, and like yeah.
And it sounds like everyone's looking forward to some fish and chips.
Yeah.
On the first day, Isaiah was so shy he could hardly talk, but now he's brimming with newfound confidence.
I love this, yeah. Biking was like pretty hard for me because it was my first time like doing mountain biking.
And you came off?
Yeah.
What happened?
Oh, went down the hill and had a little incident over here.
Isaiah showed me a pretty nasty graze, but it's healing up okay?
Yeah. It was painful, man. Finished the track. Just proud of myself for doing that.
Ethan, tell me about today.
It was fun, but like, it was tiring too. I'm like looking forward to getting home tomorrow.
You ready for it?
Yeah, I'm like real sore at the moment. My whole body's just aching.
So you've been walking for 2 days. I was thinking perhaps that today would have been a bit of a cruisy one, but it was actually hard work, was it?
Oh yes, it was more hard work. Yeah. There's 3 rafts, and like when like the coach said like we have to like paddle at like a certain at like the same time and all that.
All the way.
Yeah, not all the way. We're allowed breaks and stuff. Yeah, I thought we were going to flip over a couple of times.
How is this going to impact on your life, do you think? What changes could it help you make?
Knowing what my limits are and all that.
Have your limits been pushed?
Yes, definitely.
And what's the thing you've been missing most from being away from the city?
Oh, my dog. My dog, for sure.
Tell me about your dog.
Oh, we just got him a couple of weeks ago, and like he's just a puppy. He's a mixed, it's, I think, like a pit bull, a staff, and a Rottweiler. And then I'm missing my bed and my pillows.
Yeah. Who will be down at Brighton Beach tomorrow to meet you, do you think?
Hopefully my uncle.
So do you live with your uncle?
Yeah, I do.
And what school do you go to?
I don't go to no school, yeah.
Oh, well, not long now. You've got one more night here, camping. Yep. And well done, you're doing really well.
Thanks.
Belle, it's, what, day 4?
Let me think. Yes, yeah, day 4.
How's it all going?
Good. Yeah, it kind of feels like you just move from one job to the next, and, you know, saying job, a lot of it is a lot of fun too, but, you know, we get in after this and then thinking about what's for dinner and which kids need a bit of uffy and warm clothes and stuff like that, but, you know, now people are bringing out their hidden talents and joking and laughing and joining in on conversations, which for some of them is quite a big thing.
Walk up, Ned. Come on. Come up. Ned.
After demonstrating how to round up sheep with a dog, Trevor Teague takes the group into the shearing shed to show them he hasn't lost his touch.
So this is a lamb that I'm going to shear. It's about 4 months old. Never been shorn before. So it's a new experience for the lamb and for me.
Dakota's mesmerised by the shearing.
It was pretty cool to watch, I mean, because my family's pretty big in the shearing industries, and I'm kind of, like, considering probably joining it as well. But, yeah, it was pretty cool.
Now, we are at the beach in North Brighton, and a lot of family members have gathered here. Jeremy, can you just sum up how the day started?
OK, we started on the banks of the Waimak River, just as it comes out of the gorge. And so we put the tents up last night, and that was all went well till about 6 o'clock in the morning when a gale force nor'wester hit with streaming rain, horizontal rain. So we had to pack everything up in a hurry, and then they came down, got on their bikes, biked across the plains. So we're at the North New Brighton War Memorial Community Centre.
My name's Weta Mataki Wilson.
And you are Dakota's cousin?
Yes. So I'm one of the older generation of the cousins, yeah.
And you helped him get onto this adventure, didn't you?
Yeah, so I actually talked to his mum to see if she was okay for him to do this trip, and she was all for it. And then I told him that I didn't ask if he wanted to do it. I just said, Cuzzy, you're going to be jumping on. And he goes, no! But then within him, you could see that he was actually excited about it. Yeah.
He told me that he didn't know any of the other kids when it started.
No, and he wouldn't, because he actually came from Nelson, and he's only just moved here, and he's actually homeschooled at the moment. But I thought this would be really good for him.
What are you hoping that Dakota gets out of this?
Well, partly to get him off his technology, but just to get outside and actually experience just life outside, because he has been cooped up inside for so long, and part of that is due to being bullied.
His name actually means friend to all.
Troy Wilson is Dakota's dad.
I've been missing him all week. I knew he couldn't take a phone with him, so we couldn't contact each other. But that's okay. I'm here, and I can't wait for him to get in. I knew it would be life-changing for him, so, yeah.
There was some shearing going on the station last night where they were camping, and he was really into that. And, in fact, he said that he was even thinking about trying some shearing himself.
Well, he'd be bloody good at it. Oh, excuse me. His grandfather, he shore till he was in his 60s, so my father shore for just about 50 years. But for Dakota to take a liking to that, it's like I don't even think he's ever been in a shearing shed in his life. And it's funny to say that as well, because his mother was a wool handler.
The team speed to the finish on their bikes, and judging by their smiles, they're delighted to have made it. Alicia brings a tear to her mum's eye. What were you hoping Alicia was going to get out of this adventure?
A little bit of independence and trusting in herself. She doubts herself quite often, and she's actually really amazing, and she needs to know that. And I was hoping she'd learn that on this journey. And having her at 16, I hoped that she'd go better than I would. And she has. And she hugged me. Normally she'll run a mile, but today she hugged me, so she must have missed us.
Hi, Mama. Come on, let's go.
There was a wonderful crowd here to greet the group when they arrived on bicycles, but I did notice that some of the kids didn't have any family members or friends here to greet them.
It's very hard for them. We can come back from a trip sometimes and somebody might say, oh, I've got to come back to one of my parents doing something silly again, and oh, I don't like my family, and we say, well, you always got your family, and 180 is just your second family, and your family you're seeing a lot of at the moment and you're listening to us, but never forget your real family.
Isaiah, you've made it.
Yeah, so happy I made it, man. But it was a good trip. Yeah, really good trip.
Well done for doing it. And you've got a certificate?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
I noticed some young people were in tears. They were so emotional about having made it. So that really means to me that this whole trip has had an effect on them.
Ethan, give me a bit of a rundown. How are you feeling?
I'm like so glad I'm back, like in New Brighton again. I'm so looking forward to actually having a pillow to sleep on tonight, and like my own bed. And yeah.
You're probably going to sleep for 24 hours.
Oh no, I'll probably sleep the whole weekend. I need to catch up on my sleep.
Now you have won an award. Tell me about that.
Oh yeah, I won an award. It's like I can't say it really. Sorry. It's like per recent, and it's like I coped, but like I had like a little bit of moans, but I got through it at the end.
Were there times along the journey where you thought, "No, I'm just going to give up"?
Oh yeah, that was like on the hike, going up those hills and stuff. Oh, that just killed me. And like from biking at the start, I've never done like biking and then hiking for 2 days. Oh, it like tired me out.
What have been some of the best moments for you along the way?
It was probably the rafting and mountain biking on the first day. that's when we started to like know each other on the first day, and that was like a good experience.
And what are you looking forward to doing this weekend? Obviously there's having a good sleep. Anything else?
I'm playing with my puppy. I've missed my puppy so much.
Belle, how would you sum up the whole journey?
It's been awesome. It's been hard work. A lot of emotions right now. Exhausted is one of them. Proud, extremely proud of all of the young people. All of them seem to have had a really positive experience. So that's what we do it for. And yeah, stoked about that.
I still feel just as emotional as I've always felt. So emotional, I can hardly get up there and speak and thank everyone. I can barely get a word out because I always feel so proud of those young people and what they've achieved.
Jeremy Nurse from the 180 Degrees Trust ending that story from Brighton Beach. Cosmo was also talking to Hayden Devine, Alex Monteith, Chris Kelly, Belle Van Norden and some of the teenagers who proudly completed the Southern Alps Traverse. To watch this stunning 12-minute documentary that Nate McKinnon shot to go with this story, go to the Country Life webpage or visit the RNZ Country Facebook page. And that's it for Country Life for another week.
Have a great weekend. Bye now.